So in my abstract, I talked about thinking about this seminar as an allegory for my data analysis chapter. And so what I'm going to try and do in the first few moments is to whiz you through the first 10,000 words so that we can get to data analysis. So we'll see how that goes. And so my dissertation on which this is based, my MA dissertation, was to do with, it was a general concern it began with, to the lack of critical engagement with the identities in policy and practice of development worker identities. And this is a best-selling development studies textbook, and this is one of the only mentions of development workers in a book that's titled Approaches, Actors and Issues. This is how they position development workers. So they're well-meaning people, like the typical development worker, are Western middle-class citizens working for middle-class organisations from largely middle-class societies, unprepared for the class shift that occurs upon arrival in the third world. And this is pervasive. So this is throughout the literature. If they are mentioned, this is very often how they're constructed. And so this trope of the well-meaning, the generally good, the Angelina Jolie giving up acting to go and save the world, is within academia too. And it was kind of, my starting point, I suppose. So for people who they may face some challenges going to live and work in a developing context, seem to me at least unhelpful, possibly quite dangerous, in understanding the relationships of power, particularly in this field, and of affect, of what's going on between practitioners and the so-called developing world, the developing other, which is very often the binary that gets created. But just as unhelpful is the opposite, I think, and sometimes what's another kind of trope that's come through is the selfish development worker. Well, they're just going for themselves. So there's this well-meaning, or there's the selfishness, and that's particularly oriented in volunteer tourism, like people that are going to do something. Either they're doing it for the good of the other, or they're doing it for this fantastic experience of being overseas for themselves. So there's this binary, and again, I don't think that's very helpful. So kind of a starting point. So what did I do? I kind of turned to post-structuralism, because that's what you do when you have something that's so homogenised. And more specifically, I turned to queer theory to destabilise this homogenised identity. And I was thinking about queer as a process, so something too queer, as opposed to thinking about just chucking LGBT identities at this. So what does it mean to queer something? And having started that, and as kind of started thinking, well, you know, what would happen if I threw LGBT identities into the well-meaning development worker subject? What does that do? And that's like, oh, that's quite interesting. And then I realised that, did a couple of pilots and realised that it wasn't just about, well, I could do more with queer theory. And so I began to think about queer intersectionally. So what does queer do to sexuality? What does queer do to class? What does queer do to gender? And think about that deconstructive project in an intersectional space. And going one step further, and there are some issues there, because queer obviously has quite a structural origin, thinking about the intersection of one thing with another. And I was not so interested in how those things kind of like came together and where they met. I was interested in kind of pulling at the strands of these different things as a deconstructive project. And the other thing that I was very interested in is the idea of place. And what makes something queer is to do with place and our place in relation to the other. And so given the relationship to the mobility of development workers from moving from one place to another to do development, I was interested in ideas of place and how movement between places produced moments of queerness. Age, ethnicity, race, sexuality, gender and so on had the potential to become queer. How do we travel intersectionally speaking? And in those moments of mobility and interacting with others, who is the one that becomes queer? Do development workers express their queerness about themselves, or do they queer the other? Do they see themselves as the one possessing difference, or is the other the one that is different? Does it produce moments of learning for them in their identity? And what can this production of queerness tell us about the contingent and effective relationships of development work? So far, so good. You know, I've kind of got this destabilizing development work identities. I've got a way in, I think, to think, you know, like, is it about place? Is it about queerness? Right. And then I kind of had a problem, which was I have to write about this in a data analysis chapter. And I ran into that problem of queer theory and structure, and queer theory and having to put something back into the material world. How do I do this? And particularly within the structure of academia and the fact that I would need to produce a beautifully bound, polished blue book that was hopefully going to sit on a shelf or in a store cupboard or something, and with the expectations of marking criteria. And, you know, I've had this wonderful deconstructive project where I want to challenge academic constructions of development work identities, and here I am having to reconstruct them. How am I going to do this? Can I do this? Is this possible? So this is, I guess, my segue, my transition into thinking about what then queer would mean for a methodology, and also what it might mean to queer the presenting of a data analysis chapter and therefore presenting at a seminar, and seeing those things as... often there's a degree of engagement in the production and writing of a text in a post-structuralist way, and we might think about the different ways that we could present our data and our analysis in writing, and we borrow from literature to do that. But then suddenly when it comes to the pedagogy of a seminar, we go back to presenting in a very straight way, as I'm doing now in a round room. And so my plan is to not do that, or to try and think about what would it mean, as I tried to do in my analysis, what would that also mean in this seminar space? So I don't know if it's going to work. So bear with me. And maybe that's something, or hopefully that's something we can talk about. So the first, I'm going to talk through three things that I tried to engage with in my data analysis chapter, and these are also three things that I'd like to talk through today. So within the data analysis, the first thing I wanted to think about was, well, who am I in this big relationship of things? Who am I? And is there a way that I can decenter myself as author, presenter, and person of authority in this moment? So the first thing I thought about was, well, I'm a research student and I'm doing a development master's, and my master's is in education and gender and international development. And that's kind of who I am, and that's who you see me here being. And then I thought, right, well, that's not only who I am. So I'm also... So, yeah, I was also one of these people. The people that I've kind of been, like, critiquing and trying to engage with and wondering who they are and wondering... who was I in that picture? And having reread my diary and my online blog, because that's what you do, it was terrifying. It was utterly terrifying. But also part of who I am in my research and in my research project and who I have become. So I think it's kind of an important thing to recognise. And I wonder then, in seeing this, who do I become to you? Who do I become to a reader? How, in some way, when I'm writing in my data analysis chapter, do I recognise who I might be and who I am not? What do I say and what do I not say? Do I somehow become unrecognisably queer to you? I don't know. So there's something to do with audience, there's something to do with author, and the second thing, or the third thing I suppose I wanted to think about, today was my participants and the people that were part of my study. And I wondered how I introduced them. And so what I'd like us to do is to introduce ourselves to each other. And I don't mind if that's next to the person next to you or in small groups. But I'd like us to just take a couple of minutes or a minute. I don't know what we're like for time. Okay. To introduce ourselves. And that's all I'm going to say for now. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting introductions, I think. And Emily and I are actually going to be running a workshop on academic introductions at a conference soon. So I don't want to go too much into it, but I certainly think that it's also related to the way that we might think about our participants and the position of reflexivity that we might try and adopt in introducing them. And what do we claim? So what do we say about ourselves when we're asked to introduce or when we need to introduce another? What do we not say? What do we purposefully censor and decide, not for here? Or what's that internal dialogue that says, ooh, da-da-da-da-da. Why do we choose to tell people certain information and not others? What positions are available to us? And do we claim when we do this? What is the effect of place on this introduction? What is the ritual of introduction? What do we do in a data analysis? What things do we think we need to tell people just because that's what we always read? Why do we introduce ourselves in a round? And once one person says, hi, my name is, the next person says, hi, my name is, and hi, my name is, and there is this iterative thing that then goes on. So can we disrupt that in some way? I want to think about what this means when it comes to applying this to data. This is an extract that I did use in my dissertation, and I'll just read it now. Development that involves business deals in developing countries still gets done in a way where heterosexual men have privileged access because one is more willing to buy and sleep with a hooker. That's by and large how this deal was being negotiated, and that's how the trust was being developed. And I just don't know that I can. I mean, it was fine in this instance. I just very quietly, after the client had left with his girl for the evening, I told her I was married and that I was not going to take her home. And being married is not an excuse, by the way. I mean, we'd gone out to dinner with this guy's wife 2 hours before. I told her I would be happy to slip her. I mean, I'd be happy to give her $10 more if she didn't make a fuss. But there's only so many times you can do that before someone causes a fuss, right? So the data in and of itself is quite interesting, I think. But my questions about this data then come. So as we read this extract, what do we read onto this extract? What do we assume about this extract? If I have introduced this person beforehand, what does that do to my data? So if I tell you, first of all, that this is a man, there's a way of reading this data. If I tell you that he describes himself as a straight-acting gay man, what does this do to the way that we read this data? If I tell you that he's an American man who's straight-acting and gay, what does this do? If I tell you that he has a partner of 20 years, what does this do? And if I tell you that he works for the World Bank, what does this do? So there's something there, I think, in how we introduce and what happens and so on. So in summary, the way I'm trying to think about my data and in a seminar is how these three things come together, what they do. So what did I do? In my dissertation, I began by naming the existence of all three. Me, the participants, and the audience. And I wrote in the first person and discussed my process of sense-making of my data. I did not introduce the participants, but explained my reasons for not introducing them. And that was a conscious choice to ask the reader to adopt a reflexive position, to question the assumptions they make about people and the effect this has on the production of knowledge from data. I did keep data extracts quite long to help facilitate this. Finally, I asked questions to provide a space for answers in the data analysis and to provoke dialogue. So I actually had question boxes and had some space like left in the analysis, but obviously this was quite limited for that kind of like back and forth discussion. So in future, I'm hoping to use things like QR codes and embed them so that that could then go to an online space to facilitate some kind of continued discussion about data and reproduction of data that, instead of closing something down, opens it back up. And again, to come back to this idea of new interpretations, that's not about a claim to knowledge, but to continually question its production in text and in seminars. My hope, therefore, is a continual critical engagement with the complexity of the interrelationships between development practitioners and the people with whom they work.